session number 23187, wheel 3.
Mr. Ashcombe, reel 3. Now, we got to the point where you were joining 4768 flight, I got that from your notes, of 5013 squadron. Now, you weren't, although you, the next thing you wanted to do was to be this instrument repairer, that wasn't what actually happened, was it? What was the role of this squadron, and what was your...
It was Airfield Construction Service, although in previous times there'd been Works and Bricks flight, Air Ministry Works and Buildings, and it was construed to Works and Bricks. It was in 1943, after they started putting up advanced landing grounds in Kent for the returning bombers that were too shot up to get back to their own stations, that they started really building it up. And it was at that time it started with number one flight, number one squadron. And it sort of went on from there. So by this time, we'd also got our wings. This is in the chain of command. I don't mean brevies on the jacket. And by this time, it was 5013 Squadron, whose headquarters were in Newmarket, on the road that on the A11 that ran out, lovely tree-lined avenue. And we were in, once again, these big civilian houses where we overlooked the, at the back, the racehorses in training. And I was there for a few days.
And what were your duties? Is that, you were just an aircraftman, basically, a general
aircraft duty. Hand, general duties.
And what were those general duties at first?
Odd job, boy. Well, at first, it didn't make any difference. Because I was just, I don't think I had a job while I was there. I didn't do anything. I didn't clean out the toilets or anything like that. That was all laid on previously. This was just until they'd decided where they were going to send me, because 5013 Squadron covered a lot of East Anglia. And I will add now that we were part of 5352 Wing. There were four squadrons in a wing, and in mine in particular it was 5001, which of course, as I previously stated, was the first squadron to be formed, 5013, which was my squadron, 5014, and 5202. I think it was. And they were the plant squadron. They had all the bulldozers and scrapers that prepared the... before we actually laid down what the surface of the track was going to be. And I always, there's one thing I always remember. Our cookhouse was on the left-hand side of the Thetford Road, at the intersection where the other side went up to Ipswich. So this was a typical field kitchen out there, and on the apex of this junction there was an old Nissen hut. So we got our food in the cookhouse, and we had to run the gauntlet of the A11 to get to where we could sit down and have our food. And that old rusting Nissen hut was there for years afterwards, because I started playing with up on all the American bases, which they were American bases still in those days, playing with bands and accompanying. And it was quite nostalgic when I used to go up to Lake and Heath and Mildenhall to see the rusting old thing still there.
Now, so you weren't there long though, were you?
No. They finally said, here is your travel warrant. You will go up to Stradishall via, I forget what the nearest railway station was. It wasn't Stradishall. And then you get Air Force Transport to take you up to Stradishaw. Now, that was basically a collecting point as far as I were concerned. That was a four-engine conversion heavy bomber course, but that's besides the point. I was only there a couple of weeks or so, and they were just getting us together. And I remember one of the chaps I got to know while I was there, I don't think I saw him much after that, he was the son of Vera Lynn's pianist. And of course we all know who Vera Lynn was. And then they decided, right, you are all going, I think by this time I'd become, well, it was a case of I went to Stradishaw, and that was where 4768 flight basically were. And although I didn't do any work there, I was only there a couple of weeks, and we went up on the overnight train to Lockerbie. And one of the guys in my flight was Joe Crozier, the ex-Brentford and Scottish goalkeeper.
And what training did you get at Lockerbie?
Arms training.
More basic training then?
Well, no, how to take machine guns apart as against straightforward... that's why I said arms as against rifle training. And lectures on mines, telemines and things like that. Roughing it up in the mountains, two-man bivouac. You used your ground sheet and your gas cape to put together and find a twig or something to dig in the ground to suspend it, which once again, as so many of these films have proved things like that. And it was cold, and it was wet, and that was one time when we were up there that we actually saw our officer as he was up there, although I don't know where he was getting his training. But these were...
That's all sort of army training. What about... So not army training, but, you know, military training. What about the actual airfield construction part?
No. This was purely a battle course. You know, we had to go over assault courses and things like that. And... in other words, to prepare you for battle. And then that finally finished.
How long did that take?
That was 3 weeks, I think. And so we were all coming back, and that had been a forming up, not just 4768 flight. There were various flights up there.
And that would be, roughly speaking, May 1944.
That's right. And we all had to pack up. And they wanted a, well, it's not exactly a rear guard action, but the main body would go down and we'd stay up and tidy up. So we were able to go into Dumfries for the afternoon after we'd tidied up. And then we came down by road. I think we started off early in the morning coming down. And we came through the East End, not a mile away from this Jubilee Street I referred to initially, but it had all the RAF police directing us where to go, where to do a right hand and a left hand. And one thing that always stands in my memory, were when we were held up a bit and the RAF police were there, they shoved a bottle of Tizer in, and we all had a good guzzle that, because it was a lovely day when we were coming down. And when we got to the next checkpoint, we pushed it out for the next wallet to have through the tunnel. And we... No, wait a minute. No, I'm wrong. I've gone ahead of myself. This was down to a place called Quay in Lockerbie. Quay in Cambridge.
Quay.
Quay. The place is still there. The village is still there. I think there was a pub and not much else. And that's where we were sort of forming up, because one of the quarry flights, I remember him telling me, he was on the road between Quay and the A11. That's where they were plonked. And we were plonked into a field in Quay, and we had to go and fill our mattresses up with straw. and into, I think it was Bell Tents or something, and then it became a case of get your inoculations, which is when I decided to refuse my inoculations.
What was that?
I don't want stuff jabbed into me. It wasn't as bad as what happened later on, but that's besides the point.
How did they react to that?
Oh, it was quite a normal procedure. They just put in, you just wrote in your paybook, refused all inoculations and signed it. The implication was that if you caught any of the Nazis, they would treat the other people that had their inoculations first. And that, of course, was when we first saw the flights of planes going over with the black and white D-Day stripes on it. And we didn't do much there. There was a very interesting that we used to go home, actually, over the weekend. We used to get a rail pass to go down to...
You weren't confined to camp then?
No, no. Not that there was anywhere to go anyway. And we got a rail pass to go home weekend. One weekend, we were just all ready to go out. And apparently the word came up from the stores, there was a pair of trousers missing. Nobody leaves the camp until the trousers have been found. Well, they were miraculously found after the bus had left to take us to Cambridge Station. And one of the guys that worked in cookhouse there was a bit of a scruffy bloke. He was one of the writers of that popular wartime tune, Mersey Dotes and Dozy Dotes. Well, he got onto the one of the local American bases, because he'd been around that area for a while, and they laid on a couple of 2.5-ton trucks from the Americans. And they whipped us up to the A11. Then we waited 2 hours in blazing hot sunshine. And before all the roads changed, I used to go past that way once again. And then we found a Queen Mary, which is one of these long trailers to carry aircraft or propellers. I think this had a couple of propellers on. And that driver, he stopped and picked up everybody on the road. And we finally arrived in Walthamstow, I think it was, about 8:30 in the evening. So then I had, you know, it was a bit late getting home, and you've got to get back on the morrow. But we did that. And then we had the move to Eastbourne. And once again, having enjoyed the informality of the, shall we say, the clearing up lot going out, I elected to do that. And that is where we had the RAF police directing us and handing in bottles of Tizer, which we passed through. And we finally got to Eastbourne rather late at night. I don't think there was any food about. And we had to sleep on the bare boards on our mattresses without any straw in it that first night. But once again, that was just, shall we say, a holding centre before we moved on from there. And but we had a flight photograph of which I didn't get a copy. But in not too many years ago, I was put into contact with my old officer, and he said he had a copy, and he gave me a list of the personnel in the flight. Anyway, as I say, nothing much happened there. We saw the doodlebugs going over and the Oerlikon guns on the front popping off periodically. It was all barbed wire along the front there, of course. And then one morning, we were up for breakfast. And afterwards they said, oh, you've got a 24-hour pass. They never told you much anyway. But so we thought, oh, this is embarkation leave. So we all go down to Eastbourne Station, armed with travel passes, and we find out everybody's got to be back by 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. And we found out that short of getting a middle-of-the-night train to get us there at 7 o'clock in the morning, the next one, we would be after 11 o'clock. How much, I don't remember now. So we all elected to come on the later train. And if you're not back in camp by 11 o'clock, you'll be faced with desertion in the face of the enemy, charged with desertion in the face of the enemy. That train was ram-jam full when we came out of the station, and there wasn't an RAF policeman in sight. And nothing more was heard from there on in of that. So then it was a case of going down to Fareham, I think it was, all under canvas.
In Kent, is that Fareham?
No, Hampshire.
Sorry.
Hanging about, doing nothing. Some of the guys were gambling, you know, as you see on the films.
Did you gamble at all?
No.
Why not? I mean,
it's just never appealed to me.
Were you confined to camp now?
Well, I think so. There was nowhere to go, basically speaking. I don't know how long we were there. I don't know how many moves we had around there. But then one morning, or whenever, we were sort of muscled together and we embarked. And I never knew exactly where it was, the pier that we embarked from, until after the war, when I went away on a summer season to that very place. And directly I saw the pier, I thought, that is where we embarked from.
And where was it?
South Sea.
Portsmouth?
Yeah. Which figured, everybody was going around there.
And what did you take with you? I mean, what equipment did your unit have? I'm still a bit vague as to what...
No, that is fair enough. And in our case, that is a very good question. We had our backpack, in other words, our webbing, water bottle, bayonet holder, by which time, I remarked earlier, we'd been playing about with number two, SMLE number Mark II. By this time, we were issued with proper rifles. Well, no, they did very well, which were known as the number four, which had the shorter bayonet, as against the old long one with the Mark IIs. Water bottle, side pack, and the rest of our clothing. Oh, and by this time, yes, these things don't always happen straight away. Now, Where were we? It might have been Newmarket, but it was somewhere along the line. It was certainly before Lockerbie. They took all our blue away and gave us khaki. We retained our blue... I think we retained our blue shirts. I don't know that we put khaki on. And the idea of that was not to align us with the army, but RAF blue was very similar under active conditions to the German field grey, which is, I didn't find that out till some time after. And so we all trooped on this, I think it was, it wasn't landing craft infantry, I don't know which particular boat it was, there were so many, and that was
now,
it.
What did you think of the army uniform compared to the navy uniform?
The Air Force uniform.
Sorry, yes.
Well, you know, we're Air Force, so why can't we wear Air Force blue? As I say, we weren't told that. And I didn't find that out until some years after the war.
So you preferred your Air Force uniform?
Oh, yeah.
Why? I mean, was it just that it was the Air Force, or was it actually more comfortable or better produced?
No, the battle dress was the same, except and we hadn't got blue battle dress. We just had two best blue, which, of course, is a full jacket with the belt and all the pockets. No, I think it's a bit of pride. You know, when you've been in the service, you know, although we couldn't see why the army liked all that, it was pride, and we thought we'd had something taken away from us.
Now, what you got on a landing craft tank, or
don't know what it was? It was a boat. We called it the banana boat in Normandy.
Did you have any vehicles aboard?
Well, that's the thing. Once again, I found out later, and would come out in.
So you had no vehicles with you, as far as you knew.
basically no. But so that will be could be explained later.
What do you remember of the Channel crossing then? And what date?
Not a lot.
What date was it?
It was into July. That was when our wing went over. 5357 wing were over in June. They were in the early lot, and they were in fact, well, they were up in the front line all the time, you know. And when the Yanks found them one time, they said, "Oh, you're all right now, Air Force." The Yanks here, they said, "What do you think we've been doing the last 3 or 4 days?" But that wasn't our wing, as such, but they were the hectic wing.
Now, so what was the crossing like? Anything?
Don't remember much about it. It was quite calm, I believe. And, of course, by that time, when we got to Normandy, the Mulberry Harbour was up and running, so we didn't have a wet landing.
And what were your first impressions on landing in France?
What's that funny little, all these funny little boats floating around the harbour? They were the American ducks. First time I'd ever seen or heard of them. And I've heard since, too, that some of them were dropped off 3 miles out, so they came in 3 miles. I forget the DUKW description of it, but they were based on the old American 2.5-ton truck that would go on the sea, and they expanded them quite well. They were quite a useful tool in the battle.
And how did they take you ashore? Did you go ashore?
No, we went in on the Mulberry Harbour.
So
we docked and we walked away, and we had one or two funny journeys by, I think it was number one special transport car, STC. And, pardon me, that was the first time I saw fireflies in the hedges. And it was getting quite dark, and they dumped us off. They said, "Right, go down to the bottom of the field there, and that's where you'll kip for the night," which was where our Lockerbie training with ground sheets and gas capes came in. And when we woke up in the morning, we found there were all cows around, including all the cowpats as well. And then it was a case of juggling us around. These funny things where nothing individually happens, there's nothing to trigger any memories.
So your first airstrip, was it Banville?
Banville.
What do you remember about that one? What were you doing there?
Ah, that's when I first started being an airfield construction worker. Well, not exactly. So that was the air evacuation strip for Normandy wounded. And
and how did you go about it? What equipment did you have, and what did you actually do?
We had our bare hands. Basically, all we did at Banville was sweep the track night and morning, picking up shrapnel. We did 24 on, 24 off.
Had it already been made then, this year, Airbus?
Oh yes, that strip was already laid. Possibly the Royal Engineers.
You were more maintenance?
No, well, that all comes out.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right. We were a funny lot. And there were blast marks on the tents we were in. And apparently they'd had a blast, and somebody 6 foot down had got killed by blast before we were there. We had our emergency ration packs. And, of course, one or two of them got Normandy tummy. But
What were your rations? What rations did you get? What food was it?
Packeted stuff that you had to boil up once again. You know, a packet of tea and a packet of something.
Was it actual compo rations?
Yeah, that was the sort of thing it was.
And what did you think of them?
Well, what could you think of them? Especially after you'd, done the sea crossing and been charging or driven around Normandy and waking up in cowpats and all that. It was sustenance. You know, and it was all something completely new to us all. So we didn't really know what was happening, you know, need-to-know basis. And, of course, our fires consisted of the traditional half a 2 gallon can, cut in half, you know, petrol can, fill it with earth, fill it with petrol, chuck a match on it, and that's how you heated it up. Or you used your lighter, which once again, there's a little quip that make a lot of the youngsters laugh these days. In those days, we only had petrol lighters, so we used to tie a bit of string onto the lighter and drop it down in the petrol tank to fill it up, so we never had to go foraging for petrol for the lighters. And that was basically what we were doing there. As I said,
so sweeping, your main duty was sweeping the airstrip?
Yeah. Well, picking up, because it was an earth strip, you see. There was no, to the best of my knowledge, we used to use square mesh track, pierced steel planking, roofing felt, chicken wire, which was known as summer felt track, but I hadn't met any of that at all.
So at this stage it was just picking up shrapnel?
That's right. And that was, as I said, the air evacuation strip, where the wounded came in ambulance and went out by Dakotas, as against the American MASH, where they flew them in choppers and took them out in ambulances. Quite an amusing quip. And I've also found out that the WAFs that used to travel on the planes, they weren't armed, and although the plane going over wasn't carrying wounded or medical or anything like that, and they weren't allowed outside the perimeter of the track. Now, what I did see there, it was very dusty, and some of the aeroplane engines, the big Typhoons, were only lasting 20 hours because of all the dust and the grit and the sandiness and all that. So they suddenly found that the Navy had large quantities, probably of diesel or something like that, which they were spraying all around to damp down the dust so it didn't get into the operating marquees or things like that. That was the first bit that I found where actual plant was being used. Keep the dirt down.
I did that. Wasn't that a bit dangerous, spraying petrol around?
No, diesel.
Diesel, but diesel doesn't catch fire so easy.
No. Well, that solidified it. What else could you use, you know? Army, active service, you know, you did what you could.
And what else happened while you were there?
Not a lot. We could go walking around, and I don't know whether it was from there or when I was at couple of the other airstrips, because they did move us around. But I remember I had a walk. We heard some music from a band. Oh, we'll go and sort this one out. And they were playing on the back of a truck. And I thought, well, that makes a nice little change. But once again, more of that anon. It would be silly to mention it at this time, other than the fact we heard music.
So what happened next then?
Well, once again, our great friends, Number 1 Special Transport Corps, would move us around here and there. And then ultimately...
It's between different air bases, but...
Air strips.
But there's nothing particular to say about.
No. Well, there's nothing to do out there, basically, you know. We were lucky. We never got strafed. And as I keep bringing in this Number 1 STC, we had no transport.